do Ben's report on 377, so that then John can talk to Brady, and also John's, which can give his information needs. We sent you all his letter from the third judicial district, and John will be on the phone, hopefully.
Is David on the phone? Is he true?
I'm right.
We're gonna be anticipating, so we should hopefully have him.
David Carroll, are you on the phone? He's not on the phone yet, Justice. Judge Shagelmilch is, though.
John is? Okay.
Yes.
You said David's not on the phone?
He's not on the phone yet. Hi there, this is Jamie with the AOC. Who just joined us?
This is Mike Montero.
Hi, Judge.
Hi.
Yes.
Hey, Jamie. It's Joni Eastley in Tonopah also.
Hi, Joni.
And Nate.
Okay, you know what? Jamie, let's do go around and see who's here.
Okay.
Start with the person.
Go ahead, Ben.
Ben?
Oh, Ben is here.
I'm here. Are we ready to hear about SB 377?
We're just doing introductions right now. We're just doing introductions right now.
Oh, yeah.
Hi, this is Rochelle Resnick.
Diane Roth.
Karen Kreisenbeck.
Tom Armstrong.
That's all for Carson.
Apologize for my disorganization, but it's been quite a day.
Anybody in Reno?
Washoe.
I haven't seen Washoe sign in yet.
They were on there earlier. I think we lost Washoe.
Let's see, who else do we have? We've got Judge Aaron Gary.
Yeah. Hello, yeah. This is Judge Farron.
Judge Kaysen.
Who do we have now, though?
Hello?
Hi, Judge, this is Jamie.
Hi, we're trying to connect, Jamie, but I just got on the phone, so I was here on time.
Okay.
We're trying to connect the TV system, so.
Okay, thank you, Judge.
John McCormick, AOC. Chief Justice Frank Cherry.
Mary Pushman.
Bill Cohn.
Jeff Wells.
Drew Christensen.
David Cheek.
John Ramrose.
Ada Lamack.
Candace Jessup.
Okay. Simmons. Okay, we do have a quorum, Chief.
Is David Carroll on the phone yet?
Not yet.
Yes, just came on.
Oh, he just signed on.
Okay. All right, we're ready. David, what I said is we're going to start with Ben, and then we'll go to Franny, and then John Andros, you, and then we'll have John Smith from Third District, so let's do it. And also, Justice Stevens is here with me.
Okay, thank you.
We need the body part. She's here.
Kevin Higgins here.
Hi, Judge.
Ben, go ahead.
Ben Graham, I'm sorry for the confused state. I just got out of a 3-hour hearing on Veterans Court matters in the Assembly Parole and Probation Department. Very interesting because we had divisions between Clark County and basically the other 14 or 15 counties. Part of the interesting thing was that one of the primary opponents or the most vocal and organized of SB 377 was the district attorney from Douglas County. But with that said, With much effort, the bill has been set for hearing on April 5. It's my understanding that David will be here from his home base, and Franny will be here as well. The NACO people have voted to take a neutral stance, which is kind of understandable. It's interesting in the discussion that we've had. I don't think anybody disagrees with the constitutional right to counsel, but it seems that over the years, Nevada, whether truthfully or not, has kind of taken a buffet-style approach to compliance with the law. Everybody wonders what the heck happened to the State Public Defenders Program. There's been studies and studies. And I think probably the facts are going to be unchallenged, except the point that will be made, I think, by Jackson, if something's really wrong and we have ineffective assistance of counsel, bring litigation, bring a lawsuit, and we'll get a court ruling on it. But with that said, the hearing is on the 5th, and again, Franny and David, and I'll be there. We've got a receptive committee. The question will be, and I haven't really seen a dollar amount yet, but we've got a week or so to get that together. And if there isn't a dollar amount, we need to be able to explain that. I really don't know too much else to say, except we've gotten some blowback from a judge or two, obviously defense counsel in the rules are going to be concerned, if not opposed to the measure. But we've got a hearing, and we'll put on a good show and a good program, and if this for some reason doesn't go, it at least would be a good basis to kick off some other remedy, if that's the desire of the participants. I really, if there are any questions or whatnot, I'm more than open to those. It's a real emotional event for the participants and for the proponents of this legislation too. But any thoughts or questions from the group?
Let's have some discussion. John Lenros, would you give your discussion? We'll have Franny, and then we'll have the third district's going to drive.
Thanks, Chief. I hope to be brief here. I just want, for those of us who have been on this commission since 2007, which most people in this room, and on this call, just a brief overview of how we got to where we are in SB 377.
Excuse me, this is Judge Slagelmilch, and I can hardly hear anything that's going on. And I'm getting like every third word.
I've got the volume up as loud as I can get it. So can you guys talk into the mics a little bit, please?
If what I'm sitting next to you, mic's up there. Okay, I'm sorry. I thought I'll stand up. Is that any better, Judge?
I can hear that better, yes.
That's better.
Okay,
thank
I'll
you.
I'll stand up. I didn't realize that's where the microphone was. Okay. Again, I'll try to be brief. When this commission was impaneled, there was a rural subcommittee impaneled, and on that subcommittee was Judge Pappas, myself, and Diane Crow. Long story short, we did not come up with a recommendation that was adopted by the Indigent Defense Commission on a protocol for the selection of indigent counsel in the rural counties. We had recommendations that our subcommittee came up with, but they were not adopted by the full commission. And at a district court convention in Lake Tahoe in the summer of 2008, we reached an accommodation whereby we would put it on hold, for lack of a better way of putting it. And Clark County and Washoe County got out in front of us and came up with their model plans, which, in my opinion, in short, kind of put up what I think is a much better constitutional firewall between the judge and the appointment of counsel process. That seems to be working really well from what I've seen and from what people have been telling me in both of those counties. A couple of years after that, the rural subcommittee was asked by the Indigent Defense Commission to look into this again, specifically with an eye toward some of the counties throughout the state were doing concerning their fee protocols with their court-appointed counsel. On that committee was, on that committee was myself, Diane Crow, and Judge Todd Russell in Carson City. One of our recommendations, among others, was that the Supreme Court enter an order prohibiting flat fee contracts without getting into any more detail, and coming up with a contract that allowed for additional fees in the if the court saw fit that additional fees were warranted in that particular case. So a straight flat fee contract by an order entered in 2015 that summer was forbidden. So notwithstanding that, I don't know because I haven't done a survey, and maybe Frank can speak to this after me. Since that order came down, I don't know if all of the counties are abiding by the order, but it was certainly the intent of the Nevada Supreme Court to abolish straight flat fee contracts. We were then, and one thing that this commission also should recall historically from this, from the ADKT in this case, the Nevada Supreme Court has already entered an order several many years ago endorsing the concept of an indigent defense commission. And the type of indigent defense commission contemplated by this Senate bill. So this is nothing new, the Indigent Defense Commission, with regard to the rural counties of the, in Nevada. So this is really nothing new. What we've put together here historically has a lot of precedent. It was not with a formal subcommittee, but what I tried to do is put together a committee of the whole and involve as many rural county judges as I could. We had a telephone conference call in November, and many of the rural judges participated in that call. My recollection was that Judge Young was on the call, Judge Schmedel-Milch, Judge Kaysen, Judge Fairman, and I think Judge Montero. And we hashed out some of the concerns that the judges had. It was my feeling at the end of that call that there were concerns that David Carroll was going to deal with. One thing that I recall specifically was the judges were concerned as to whether or not the VDR as written had a problem regarding if a judge was not happy with the quality of defense that the central office was providing, what remedies would the judge have? And David can speak to the amendments that he wrote into the bill to what I can recall satisfied the concerns of the rural judges, the several judges had on that particular topic. So anyway, what we finally arrived at, and what I thought, unfortunately, I was not able to make the Indigent Defense Commission meeting last December. But it was my understanding that this committee, as did Justice Hardesty's committee, the Legislative Advisory Committee on Criminal Justice, agreed in principle that this to endorse this bill going forward. It wasn't Senate Bill 377 at the time, but it wasn't the bill draft resolution that David Carroll and I and some other people put together did not differ too much from that. So we are here today now to talk about where we go from here. I know that on Wednesday of next week, I will provide my testimony in support of the bill. And in general, my support is predicated on what I said in front of the Nevada Association of Counties, in front of members of the criminal defense bar and district attorneys that I know, that I think that it works several good things. It has several good outcomes. The first one is it returns the obligation to pay for indigent defense in the rural counties to the state of Nevada. It freezes the amount of money that a county has to pay based on what they paid fiscal years 15, 16, and 17 forever. So if we're talking about this 15 years from now, Eureka County's obligation to pay indigent defense costs is frozen at that number.
It's capped.
Well, that they won't have to pay. Their obligation will not be any more than that amount of money going forward, absent any legislation in the future. And we don't know what the Nevada legislature is going to do in the future. Number two, it builds the kind of firewall with voice protocols. I don't know, maybe that's feedback for me. It builds a kind of firewall with rules and protocols in place that that separates the judge appointment and counseling process, as we have in Washoe County, and it sounds like in Brandon also, and as we have here in Clark County. And finally, it leaves
Mr.
the
Chairman.
Counties.
Are you getting the same feedback as I'm getting?
Yeah, if everybody who isn't speaking could mute their phones, that would be very helpful. We're getting a lot of paper shuffling and tapping, and so if we could mute, that would be great.
And finally, and this is my opinion, and I'm sure that I'm going to get, we'll get some feedback on that. I think it provides enough local control on the with the counties. It certainly did with most of my friends and colleagues in NACO, except for a few. It provides enough local control on the indigent defense appointment process to allow for the kind of flexibility that a rural court needs in order to get the public's business done on a day-to-day basis. So having said that, I frankly thought coming to this meeting that we had some consensus. Obviously, legislation is not easy. I know going forward that SB 377 is a starting point, and Senator Sederblum and his committee are more than willing to work with this commission to make the kind of amendments that we think might be conducive to getting the legislation passed and making all of the parties in this particular commission happy without compromising too much. So, you know, this is not the final bill. It's a process. And Ben, the last thing I would speak to, I wouldn't get your knickers all twisted about a fiscal impact statement, because frankly, my thinking about that is the counties have been so reluctant to give us the kind of the rural counties to give this commission the kind of information we need on the appellate appointment, indigent defense appointment process. And I can speak to that with personal knowledge based on the fact that I was on the rural subcommittee for the last 10 years. And even with letters coming out from Chief Justice Cherry, Chief Justice Hardesty, Chief Justice Maupin at the time, we were still getting a lot of difficult stonewalling from the rural counties on very valuable fiscal information. I have been told by the Legislative Council Bureau and by members of the legislature that we should not have any difficulty getting that information if this bill, in whatever form it comes out of Senator Sederblum's committee, if it comes out of his committee, we will not have any difficulty whatsoever getting that information from the money committee that it will go to. So I am frankly not worried about, it's certainly going to have a fiscal impact, we all know that. And the fiscal impact is going to be on the state of Nevada. How much money that is, we can only guess. It's going to be a lot of money. So, you know, we're not going to get that information between now and a week from tomorrow. We're just not going to get it. I've spent 10 years trying to get that information. But perhaps the Senate Finance Committee will have a little easier time getting that information than this commission has had. So having said that, I'm going to shut up, and I think Franny was going to say a few things, and perhaps David can say a few things. But I think what we need to hear from my friends and colleagues on this subcommittee in the rural counties, the judges that have spent so much time and provided so much valuable input on this in this process. So going forward, we can have some consensus on this, if any. And thanks again, and I appreciate the opportunity to have been able to work on this.
David Carroll?
Yes, thank you. Thanks, everyone. I wanted to start by saying I've been impressed with the amount of collaboration and deep thought that went into what we believed was a consensus bill moving forward. I've engaged with lots of judges and county managers and the folks at the Nevada Association of Counties have been really good. We've had a number of long, lengthy conversations, and I've been impressed with the care and concern that everyone has brought to this issue. Our role at the Sixth Amendment Center is to try to listen to all the competing concerns and put forward suggestions that have worked in other states, in other jurisdictions, that we think will help you meet your Sixth and 14th Amendment constitutional duties. What we can't do is we can't put forth and draft the actual bill. We can only work on consensus language ahead of time. And because we're a 501c3, we're not allowed to lobby or really do anything once a bill has been drafted. And so I was a little concerned when the bill came out, and there were changes from the last draft that we had. I've read Judge Schlegelmilch's letter reflecting some of the opinions of the other judges that we're working with, and I must say that the vast majority of this rings true. There's a lot of things that were agreed upon that didn't make that bill draft. I think it's important to get the judges to support this, to get some amendment language in there, to fix some of these last minute things. I cannot do that because it's an active bill. The only thing I can do at this point is, upon request of the chair of a committee, testify and provide technical assistance to the entire committee about the process that was reached, the past history, the past problems, my observation as a national expert. But as far as amendments, that's going to have to be the people in this room on this call to put those forward. If a committee member says, what do you think of this amendment, I can say that reflects the consensus language that was agreed upon or something like that. So I'm just putting that out there to say, one, I still think we have a lot of consensus here, and if we can fix the judge's concern, and I certainly think that's the right approach, hopefully they will be able to support it. But we do need someone, you know, whether that's Ben or someone at the court, to be able to get these concerns put forward to Senator Siegerblum. I think it will vastly improve the bill. What I can say, and this speaks a little bit to what John Lambrow said, the idea we're trying to fix here is that the 14th Amendment makes Sixth Amendment responsibilities a state concern. And even if they push off that obligation onto counties, it is still the state's responsibility to ensure that the counties are not only able to be meeting the state's Sixth Amendment's obligations, but that they are in fact doing so. And right now, your state has no ability to do that. No one is charged at the state level with ensuring that the counties are doing this. We tried to craft a consensus language that if the counties are doing what they're supposed to, then there's no harm. They're allowed to keep local control. They can continue local funding if that's what they so choose. But it's all about the state living up to their obligations. And that's what I'm going to testify to at the 5th. But I do appreciate the judge putting down on paper the concerns that were omitted from what we had all agreed on. So I'm happy to take any questions, but that's where I see things as being right now.
There?
I must have left everyone speechless. I don't know.
Chief Justice, can you hear us?
Still. Yep, there you go.
Oh, there they are.
That's me, but I think we've lost Vegas.
Yeah, we lost everybody. This is Judge Schlegelmilch, by the way.
Hi, Judge.
And is Vegas back, or?
Can you hear me? Hans, can you hear us?
We can see you, we can hear you. Can you see or hear us?
We can see you, we couldn't hear you for a while, so.
Okay,
you're back.
Franny was just getting ready, but before she does, I just want to say one last thing in response to what David said, and this could move things along. The judges that were on that letter with Judge Schmidtville, if there's a way between now and a week from tomorrow when this bill is heard, that Ben can get that amendment language to Senator Cederblum through David, Ben can get that amendment language to the committee. I think that would be a great idea, particularly if after this discussion today, there's a consensus. I have to admit, I should admit, David is absolutely right. If SB 377 didn't have the language in that we all agreed on before the BDR, after the BDR, then it needs to go in there. So I apologize for that oversight. Thank you, David, for clarifying that. And Ben Graham, I hope you can do something like that before the Wednesday hearing.
Well, we'll start working on it shortly.
Can you hear me?
We can.
Yes.
Okay, all right. So first off, you should know that I've signed on as local, this is for enforcement, I've signed on as local counsel with a national law firm in the ACLU. We're in the exploratory and investigative stages of preparing a lawsuit. And hopefully, then, if this legislation goes through, then the relief may be exactly what the lawsuit is seeking. We've done some court watching, and some of you judges in the rules may have seen some of us in your courtrooms. I really have my concerns are met by this bill. I didn't get into the technical part of what you deal with day to day in the counties. But my three main concerns, based upon the many years of working with a national indigent defense system, were that the selection of counsel and provision of resources to counsel was sufficiently independent of the judiciary, and secondly, that there be a system for the establishment and oversight of standards of representation and caseload, and both of those are met, and finally, that there be some system for the provision of data so that you can actually evaluate the system. And so, having read through the bill, I think that all of those needs are met by this bill. And so, I'll be going to Carson City next week to testify in support of it.
John Savage.
Judge Schlegelmilch.
Yes.
He's online.
No. All right. So. What I did is, I took some pretty decent notes when the committee got together, and I went through the Senate bill and kind of modified it with some proposed language, which I believe was emailed to everybody this morning. That's on the commission. The fact of the matter is the way you see some of the issues in this bill from the rural judge's perspective is that we have not in the past been provided the greatest service through the state public defender. And to make the assumption that just because the state's going to take it over, that for some reason and magically they're going to comply with all the state regulations or the adopted standards, as well as provide current and quite honestly effective defense services in the rural counties, is difficult. The last comment that I heard from one of the judges is that that just let go of the state PD's office was, it isn't going to work if they send two attorneys up every Monday at noon from Las Vegas to be public defenders. The fact of the matter is, and I think honestly, the rural counties, and somewhat disingenuously, do not provide these legal services. Because the judges, at least the judges that I'm familiar with in all the rural counties, focus on the fact that everybody's entitled to a good defense. And we are kind of the gatekeepers of that out here in rural Nevada. And to be honest with you, the contract experience that we've had, and as well as from what I understand in Ely, Douglas County, and some others, has been very good because it minimizes conflicts and it maximizes the amount of client time with attorneys and some other things. Now, that being said, we discuss a lot of these things, especially in relation to conflicts of interest, in relation to counties being able to opt out of the program, in relation to ensuring that dependency, abuse, neglect actions under 432B are included within the indigent defense services, as well as some of the other significant things that I pointed out in my letter to the commission. The language that I propose is just that, proposal. It just so happened that it when I read the bill yesterday, it caught me off guard, because I wasn't really prepared for the language that was in the bill. So, you know, at that point, I just felt I needed to get it in writing, because otherwise it would get lost in the system. So, that being said, that's what it is. These are things that a majority of which were discussed, and a consensus was built among the world judges in relation to these things. And then I just followed it up with some of my own personal observations, and I actually just submitted and wrote some language to be included or removed from the bill. So that's my position. I believe there still is a consensus among the rural courts, and I've talked to a number of the judges in relation to some of these things. So I think that's where the rural court is, where the rules are at this point. To put the Office of Indigent Legal Services in charge of evaluating the counties when they would get the county's money after reviewing or evaluating the county system, to me, is the most crazy idea I have ever seen in my life. How is that independent? To have the district court and or the Supreme Court tell a county how to provide defense services, how is that not judicial interference with the executive function for them to be able to appoint their own public defenders?
I agree.
The way we see it, there are a number of fundamental flaws in the current bill. And all I've tried to do is point those out and see if we can't get consensus on those things that are necessary changes to this bill to make it work. I think the concept, and I believe all the rural judges believe that the concept is a good one, but we have to make it work so nobody gets the short end of the stick, so to speak. So that's my comment.
Response, John or Franny or Dave Carroll?
David, I'm gonna throw this hot potato over to you, because I think Judge Spiegelman just made some very good points.
I do too. I said in my comments, I think, whenever language goes into the actual drafting, things change for whatever reasons. Things get omitted, things get added in. And I do think he points out exactly some of the failings that, we felt we all had consensus on. again, unfortunately, it's a sitting bill, and I can't work on it without being in violation of my tax status. You know, I can tell you all, the process that we reached to the final language was the one that I was feeling good that we had a broad consensus. That nobody was 100% happy with it, and that's usually a good sign for legislation, because the best legislation, everyone's a little, you know, a little disappointed. But I literally can't work on the amendments. It's going to have to be others. But I can tell you that the judge brings up exactly the points that we had felt we had consensus that are omitted in this new bill.
Well, let me ask you this then, David, because obviously we don't have a lot of time here. Would it be okay for you to get to, because I mean, if you're okay with what Judge Spendelmilch just put in his letter, then I'm okay with it, because you know, you've been boots on the ground with this in terms of hammering out the language that the judges wanted. Would it be okay for you to give that before it became a bill information to Ben, so Ben could then just forward it to the committee for purposes of amending it before the hearing? Or I'm a rookie when it comes to this.
Let me intervene in this time. I think it will put John McCormick and Ben together with the judge and see if they can start getting the language together. John, you'll be willing to do that?
Yeah.
And you and Ben can get together with the judge, and it doesn't sound like you have an objection to what Judge John has said, so let's go with it. And this way,
David? Did you hear what the chief just said? How do you feel about that?
No, I think that's great if John McCormick can work on it. And unfortunately, John, your proposal of can I do the language and pass it on, I'm precluded from doing that. But if John wants to get in contact with me about does this generally agree with what was the consensus view before, I could do something like that, but I literally can't put pen to paper on any of this now that it's an active bill.
This is bad.
And John, keep together with the judge.
David, just so we're on the same page, I think I understand what you're saying. My thinking is somehow this got all screwed up when it went to LCB. Because what we gave, with the BDR we gave to LCB, had all of the stuff, all of the language that the judges wanted in it. And
yes.
Judge Turnbull is absolutely right. So it would seem to me that all Ben, John, and Judge Schmeckenlitz would need would be our BDR, right? And try to get, so that the three of them could, with BDR, the BDR that, as Judge Schmeckenlitz puts in his letter, that was finally arrived at in the middle of March, could go to John, Ben, and the judge, which could then go to the committee. Because would that be okay? That wouldn't get you in trouble with 501c3.
No, because that's that was produced before the bill. So yes, I can send on to make sure everyone has the final language, and then John and the judge and whomever can put together the amendments that are necessary.
This is bad.
I don't know if they could even do a substitute bill.
This is Ben.
Hang on a sec, man. Judge Spendelmilch, how does that sound to you?
Well, I certainly don't have any problem with that, and I'll participate with trying to clarify the language. I only received the modified language on March 16th, so we never had a chance to comment on it. I'm not sure that it perfectly reflects our positions, and I'm absolutely positive it doesn't reflect Judge Fairman's position or mine in relation to county's abilities to opt out. you know, the modified language, which is also in your packet. So everybody, the packet that came out from the AOC had the quote-unquote modified language attached to it. So I'm not sure that all the modified language satisfies some of our concerns. It partially satisfies our concerns. As set forth in for those things that were included in the bill, included in the modified language. So, you know, the only thing that I can say is that or the bill drafters, or whoever you want to say, really did some things to the substance of the bill and moved things around. And you know, in some respects, I thought that was good when I read SB 377, because I thought it made it more clear in some respects. But they left out, I think, some of those things. We never had a chance to get back to really kind of take a look at Mr. Carroll's language that was proposed to do some of the things that we had discussed at the rural subcommittee, if you want to call it that, level. So I think that's kind of the consensus amongst some of the judges that some of the language included doesn't go far enough, and maybe some of the language included in those proposed changes went too far, especially as it relates to judicial intervention into the process of selection of who's going to provide defense services.
Then maybe I can make this suggestion, David. Tell me if this would work, if it fits within your comfort zone. If that is the case, if we didn't have 100% consensus with the modifications that you came up with in mid-March, would you be able to participate in a conference call with John, Ben, and the judge to work that out before Ben and John sent proposed amendments to the committee before the hearing?
That's right at that line. I'm going to need to get clarification from the federal government before I say yes, because I don't want to risk anything by stepping into the lobbying field. So I will get clarification ASAP and get back to everyone.
This is Ben. I've not really reviewed the judge's letter yet. Are there things in that, if anybody's reviewed it, that you do not want blended into 377? Is there anything in there you do not want blended in?
Well, I this is John Lambert. That's the reason I think that it sounds to me like, from what David said, again, please don't hold me to this, but it's in spirit, I think that everything that is in the judge's letter was pretty much agreed upon in mid-March. It just didn't make it into SB 377. Does that sound right, David?
Yeah, with the caveat, as the judge said, is that they never had the opportunity from that mid-March language to come back to me and say, we like this, we don't like that. So there's still... I don't want to give the impression that there was 100% consensus on that language, but I think that's a fair definition of where things were. Is I tried to address all their concerns. I put it out there, and then there's probably still some back and forth needed to be done. But the idea was to try to address everything that the judges still had, as far as, you know, attorneys can still keep private work, and some of the issues as far as who's doing the evaluations, the commission instead of the office, the representation of some of the civil work and others. I tried to be as responsive as possible on all those points, thought I felt like I had answered most of them, but again, there was not any time for them to be able to review and get comments back before the bill landed, so.
Then again, rather than completely redo the bill, which LCB will not go along with, essentially, if we could take the existing language of 377, which some of you have said there's some favorable things in there that we like, and blend in the comments from the judge into the existing bill, would that work for that group?
This is McCormick.
This is Judge Fairman. Yeah, this is Judge Fairman, and I wanted to just throw out a couple of other comments. I think we're on the right path with respect to Judge Schlegelmilch's comments, which I concur with. The draft that came out for the Nevada Right to Counsel Commission on March 13th also had some changes which we discussed today, and you know, if go with respect to amendments is towards a blending of what David Carroll had in that draft that didn't make it into the final, which was a, I guess, an oversight, together with the judge's comments today, and those are massaged, then I think you can probably get to the necessary amendments.
This is McCormick. What I'm going to do tomorrow is take SB 377, go over it with the language that David sent on the 13th, blend those together, and then look at that in terms of Judge Schlegelmilch's letter, and then send that out to the rural group that has been working on this to see if that addresses everybody's concerns, and then we can make tweaks from there and get it ready to give to the committee on Tuesday morning.
Thank you, John.
Thank you very much, McCormick. David Carroll, out there in the ether space, can you participate in that conference call?
I have to get clearance to find out, so I'm not going to commit. I would like to, but I don't want to. I can't do anything that jeopardizes our tax status.
I agree. I totally understand. Let John know as soon as you know, if you do get clearance, David, let John know, because your institutional history memory is going to be so valuable in this process, and whatever synthesis we get, I'd love to have your input on it. Yeah, Judge Schmegelmilch and Judge Fairman, does McCormick's proposal sound okay to you guys?
Well, just so you know, I already put in the bill every amendment that I'm requesting. It's already inserted inside that bill, then. I attached it with amendments inserted in the bill. So now, whether or not that's the proposed language we want to proceed on with the legislature, well, that's always another question. And I think some kind of conference committee to discuss that with, you know, with AOC and a couple of the rural judges would probably be a very good idea if that's the kind of language we want to propose as amendments.
Now so, you said you put it in the bill. Now, are you talking about the bill 377 that's in front of us?
Yes.
No.
Yes.
His letter has the bill with new draft language in it.
Okay.
We can start from both points, and I don't think it's a bad idea that we get together and say, well, can we word this better? Can we do this better? Can we look at it in a different way? I certainly never have any problem with doing those kinds of things. I don't think that Judge Fairman has a problem with doing those kinds of things either.
And I don't.
All right, Ben, John McCormick, I remain waiting to hear from you guys. Thank you very much. And David, I hope you're able to participate. I certainly would love your input.
Yeah, Okay. Here, Jeff Wells. Jeff, you had something to add, then Franny.
I do. I want to bring the voice back from Earls just for a moment to Clark County. I participated with David early on, NACO, and some of the earlier drafts. Our concern was not trying to touch what the judge is talking about for the rural counties, but to make sure that we had the exceptions in there to pull out Washoe and Clark. Unfortunately, first of all, I agree with Ben that the LCB is not going to be happy to try to take away the entire bill, so we need to do this by an amendment form. But some of the changes that LCB made, and I just highlight section 14 for an example, it used to be a subsection under sections 12 and 13, which start off with any county whose population is less than 100,000. Then they pulled 14 out from being a subparagraph to being its own section, and it doesn't have that limitation. So, Ben, I've given McCormick down here a couple of amendments to clarify that, so we pull the big counties back out, so we can stay out of your way, so that the rural folks can go forward and do what they want to do. Last session, Clark County sort of put a Me Too amendment in there, which raised the fiscal note substantially. We are not going to be doing it this year. And based on the way 377 was drafted, if we get the amendments on here, we're not even going to put a fiscal note on the bill as it stands from a county perspective at all, which will allow Clark County to come forward and either get, and worse, be neutral and potentially even come forward to support it. And I just wanted Justice Terry to know that we have moved that far. But I got to make sure, I have not had a chance to go all through all of the judge's email today. I got to make sure that nothing in there inadvertently stuck us back under some of those provisions that were designed to be the under 100,000.
Sure.
Thanks, Jeff.
David, I have one question. This is Franny with regard to the bill as before it became a bill. And so I think you can answer the question about the intent. Was it not, in responding to the judge's comment about who does the evaluation of the individual programs, my understanding was that it was our intent that it be the commission that conducts the evaluation, not the Office of Indigent Legal Services. Is that right?
Yeah, and that language was clarified in the March 13th, or was at least attempted to be clarified in the March 13th language draft. The idea was the commission would be responsible for hiring objective outside evaluations of all systems, including those run by the Office of Indigent Legal Services.
Okay, thank you.
Anything else on this issue? Okay, we'll go on to, let's go back. Is there any public comment? We went to 377 first. Is there any public comment? I'm hearing none, we'll move on. Is there a motion to approve the December 12th meeting summary? So moved by Jeff Wells, seconded by David Sheep. Any objection? Hearing no objection, the meeting summary is approved. We'll now go to a status update on the Indigent Defense in Clark County. Public Defender Tom?
Yeah, I just, yesterday, I was given a copy of AB 253,
thank you,
which regards the adjudications of mental health. I know they do it differently up in Washoe County, so I'm just going to defer until Jeremy's discussion, seeing how they put it up north, because I'm a little concerned about how we're doing it down here.
Dave Sheep,
County Public Defender's Office is proceeding. Better taking category felonies January 1st, and we're moving forward with accepting all of the conflict category felony cases along with our murder cases.
How are you doing with caseload standards? Are you okay?
Murder cases, we're working well with the county on caseloads on murder cases. We haven't reached the point with category A felony cases, but I need to address that issue again. We're at 41 category A felony cases since the first of the year, which is about what we calculated. They're a little bit higher than I calculated with my staff, but it's about what the 5-year average was. Drew, at.
Drew, let's deal with you.
Yeah, I'll echo David's comments. I mean, it's one of our biggest procedures that we're working on, is just monitoring how that transition to our categories working, and the data collected over the last 10 years is maintaining consistency as to we have the right manpower in the SPD's office to have the volume than I need.
This is David speaking. I just want to, now that I'm getting experience in a category, felony cases, and seeing what these cases, how they come through, there appears to be, at least from my standpoint, a pattern of overcharging some of these cases that shouldn't even be charged as category A felonies, where they could have been handled by the contract attorneys that are assigned to each department instead of having to go on an hourly basis. But I'm still looking at that. We're still very early in the process on those type of cases and whether or not the district attorney is overcharging these in order to be able to negotiate cases.
Before we get to Washoe, let me go to the update on caseload standards from Hans.
Yes. You can see in the report, I tried to put it together in a way where you can see that we have some courts that we're still have outstanding statistics we're trying to get captured for 2016. The 2017 numbers that are provided there are numbers that have been provided so far, so that's incomplete information. One of the new measurements I tried to put on there so you can start seeing how these cases are interacting with each other is the clearance rate. How many cases are being filed versus how many cases are being disposed for the attorneys. I think that kind of shows you how these counties are performing in these areas. There are a couple of places where there's data anomalies, so we're going to have to contact the courts and make sure they're inputting the data correctly. Example, even though it's a small county, is Esmeralda County, where they only have one new appointment, but they had seven cases closed. Well, it probably tells me that they didn't use the right code to appoint attorneys. So I've got to contact them and get that information more accurate. But everybody else is within reason. We're comfortable with the numbers we're seeing there. But I'm happy to answer any questions you might have as you review that information.
Any questions, Hans? Thank you so much for what you've done. Let's go to Washoe. Jeremy, are you over there?
Washoe was online. They went away and they're not answering their phones, so I'm not sure.
Are you here now?
Oh, they're on the phone.
Yeah, we lost Jeremy about an hour ago, but we are here on audio. To give you a brief summary, we have seen a uptick in criminal cases generally in the county. Our biggest concern right now, I think Phil mentioned AB 253, but since the year 2013, the amount of involuntary commitment hearings that we've been assigned to has more than quadrupled. We expected to, we're on projection to have a fivefold increase in involuntary commitment cases at the end of 2017. We've spoken to the county about the resources needed for that. We thought we had a very good audience with the county, but we've had some flooding, and that's used up some of the money the county had set aside for staff. The other thing that I think the committee should be aware of is that late last year, we asked Professor Kagan for the Boyd Law School, he runs the immigration clinic, to come to Washoe County and review the processes for the Public Defender's Office to give us some indication whether we should be doing more to achieve Padilla compliance. He gave us a written report on March 6th. I shared that with the county. His opinion is that we need to likely devote full-time staff to provide immigration resources to these 8,000 or so people we represent each year. I've also talked to the county about that. If we cannot get additional resources, we're going to have to restructure our office and probably shed cases. But the two biggest critical needs up in Washoe County, at least for the Public Defender's Office, are the hospitalization resources and immigration resources.
Phil, what question do you have for Jeremy?
What resources are they using right now to do the adjudications in mental health? I mean, our numbers are staggering. We have 21 facilities that we're going to, and now they don't want to give me the reports except for like right at the time of the hearing. But that is not, we're not going to support that in the legislature. But I'm really worried. I'm going to the meeting to see just how thin our resources are.
We luckily have built a historical model in Washoe County where we, defense counsel and prosecution, will be present when the patient is interviewed by the court doctors. We can ask questions, the state can ask questions, the state can take the doctors aside to ask them questions about whether people meet criteria. It is a much more robust due process system here in Washoe County. We cannot operate the system we operate now with the numbers that you have in Clark County, and we certainly could not operate with those numbers if we didn't have the medical reports within a timely fashion to do some investigation, to interview the patients, and to consult other doctors if necessary, or consult other treatment facilities that the patient has been to. So we're shocked that some of the timelines suggested in AB 253, it just is not as directly applicable to our practice.
This is something we need to look at as a community. The mental health problem, and I mean, it's skyrocketing the number of people. And everything is done over video, and it has to be that way with human facilities, and I understand that, but we just do not have people being spoken to before the hearing because they're not getting reports. That can't be. And that's the bill. It's to give reports at the time they are. That cannot be. I let the district court. I cannot support that. Go for that.
Good. Jen, are you on the line also?
Actually, this is Mark Picker. I'm the chief deputy. Jen's out of town.
Yes. Anything you want?
You sent me the place. Just to give you a brief update, to go a little bit on what Jeremy's talked about, we took over specialty courts, I know you know that, about a year and a half ago, and we took over the felony courts in last July. The numbers are up on all that. We had to restructure our office the same as Jeremy's doing in his, because we just got our 13th specialty court up here, with our Reno Justice Court adding a DUI court. So we've actually reduced our family court attorneys to turn one of our family court attorneys into a specialty court / criminal deputy. So we've restructured a little bit. We've talked to Jeremy about the immigration issues. In fact, when Professor Kagan was up, Jeremy brought him upstairs to our office and we had the same discussion with him. We're in a slightly different situation in that a little over a year ago, we hired a criminal deputy who had 20 years of immigration experience. So we actually have that resource in the office, and he stays up on the immigration information. And we have provided his services to the PD's office as well. But as Professor Kagan noted, that invites the question of conflict of interest because they're getting information on cases where we may both have defendants. So it's not the perfect system, but at least we have some resource, but we're looking at the fact that that's going to grow. So that's where we're at. We've restructured a little bit just to get there.
Thank you. Sounds like you're on top of it. It's excellent that you have an immigration specialist there. That's fabulous. Is Bob Bell on the line?
Yes, I'm here, Chief Justice Terry. Our program has not changed much. We have had an uptick in our family court process because of the APD having to switch some of the deputies based on the specialty courts and the criminal courts in Washoe County. So we are getting some more family court cases more than usual right now. I'm not sure how long that's going to last. We're trying to solicit a few more attorneys for that.
Bob, this is Jamie with the AOC. I'm sorry. It looks like we've lost Vegas.
So, can you hear us?
We can hear you, but we can't see you.
Okay.
That's okay.
We can hear Bob.
Okay, go ahead, Bob. I'm sorry.
Okay, no problem. So like I say, that's resulted in a little uptick in our office, and as the PD and the APDs are reporting, our numbers are starting to go up again as well. So, you know, depending on what happens in their office, it flows down through our office, so we're all dealing with that right now, and not knowing exactly where this whole thing is going to go with our county budget and with, you know, some of the concerns we've had up here, we'll have to see what happens.
Thank you, ma'am. Karen, just
for your information, I know we weren't here at the beginning of the meeting, but Chief Justice Chief Judge Flanagan and Holly Wellborn from the ACLU are both present here as well.
Great. Thank you.
Karen, State Public Defender?
Not much terribly new. We're doing well. We've got our two counties. The judges seem satisfied with what we're doing. We too have seen an amazing uptick in the number of involuntary commitments. We can't quite figure out why, but we're able to cover them with current staff. Typically, by the time the hearing date arrives, they get dismissed, and we never even have to appear in court on them. So I know the judges are working with the hospitals in an attempt to try and figure out why they get set, and then they get taken off, and it does waste staff time and energy, so we're working on resolving that. We've seen an uptick in some violent crime. We've got 3 murder trials set before the end of the year. And like I said, just an uptick in home invasions, sexual assaults. I'm not quite sure why, but we're monitoring that. But again, we're able to cover that with current staff. We're just watching the bill very closely about the public defender's office. So we'll be there on April 5th with everybody else waiting to see what happens.
Anything you want to say about just being a representation here in Clark County,
please? Yeah, so one thing I was concerned is there's some language in the bill that talks about the municipal court being responsible, but then county basically invoking it for all county services doesn't clarify where municipal stands in that. As far as our municipal court, we're getting ready to reissue our RFPs, they'll go back out for new contracts to be issued July 1st, so we'll wait and see what happens with that, and they'll convene the independent commission that we have.
Do you and Jeff, did you be able to make sure you're on the same page with this?
Dan, as long as they maintain the under 100,000 provision to all those other things, you're not going to get affected either, because you're still in a city within a county that's under over 100. So you'll be exempt.
Make sure you guys are on the same page. Is there anything else from any other business? Okay. I hope we can do something with 377. I think we've exhausted using the Supreme Court for the ancient defense commission. We need to go a different direction. There being no other business, we're adjourned. Thank you very much. Jamie will be in touch for a new day for our next meeting sometime during legislation.
Thank you.
Thank you, everybody.
Thank you.
Anybody wants to see the courtroom?